You're listening to the Isoca podcast. In this episode of the Offstage and Offscript series, we're speaking with Sandy Silk, who presented a session at Isoca's North America CACS conference titled A New Rubric for IT Recruiting and Retention. So thank you so much for joining us today.
That's my pleasure.
Why do we need a new rubric when it comes to IT retention and recruiting?
It's funny. You know, we'll see often in job descriptions and job development, well, this is the traditional path. And when you're looking at IT, and I'm in information security, so even more so, but both together, they're not old enough professions yet to have a traditional path. So this is really kind of breaking away from the, okay, you had a startup, this is what you did in the beginning, but the people who were there in the beginning came from a very different time than today. And if we want to keep, you know, when you look at digital transformations that are going on, you know, if you want to keep up with the changing times, we need a changing population in this profession.
So a lot of people are expecting these computer science majors in these security positions, but you didn't have that background. So what does it take from the job applicant perspective to get the hiring manager to see past your college degree or your certifications and to really see the potential that you might have and the on-job skills you might be able to gain?
That's a great question. And I'm a huge advocate for getting more arts back in STEM. So put the A in there and make it STEAM. Because so many people with humanities, arts, fine arts background have had to do a lot of analysis, a lot of pattern detection, recognition, prediction, big picture thinking, systems thinking, critical thinking, and that is so important to our profession. We're not really in the yes-no mindset anymore, you know, true-false. We're in the how do I help business get to where it needs to be. And when people are looking at what they can offer, so my major was a bachelor's and a master's degree in Germanic languages and literatures. I wanted nothing to do with technology when I was in high school. That didn't mean that I wasn't good at it. Mm-hmm. It didn't mean I'm not good at STEM. I actually went into college as a biology major and then had an opportunity to go do a junior year abroad in Germany. So I took it, and I have a family heritage of German.
Okay.
So, like, all right, I'll just keep going with that. Thought I could double major in something else. Didn't work out, but it didn't matter. You know, just being able to learn how to think critically and come back and problem solve. And I think people just need to be able to articulate, I have great analytic skills, and this is how it's going to translate. And I would even recommend when people are writing their resumes, I've broken away from doing the chronologic. I will list my jobs that I've held in a summary at the top in chronologic order. But then I break out into analytics. Here's all the different things I have done over my career that support analytics. Here's what I've done that supports learning emerging technologies. Here's what I've done in governance and privacy, which is great for the hiring manager because I don't have to hunt through your five jobs to see where it pops up. So it makes it easier for them, but it makes it easier to focus on a particular area at a time and really get to know how to articulate it.
And so in your session, you talked a lot about how there's some gender bias just in terms of the job descriptions that you see. How can those posting job descriptions kind of get past those implicit biases that might be in their job descriptions?
Sure. So there are different tools out there. Some are free, some are professional corporate that you'd have to pay for them. So I'm not going to name one in particular, but there are tools that you can just copy and paste the text of your job posting into this tool, and it will analyze the words you're using, which are skewed more towards traditional male traits versus, I don't want to say necessarily women, but the underrepresented population, the one that's going to be minority and may feel that they have to fight to defend themselves to begin with. So as someone mentioned in the class or the session, gee, these seem more passive. Well, in a sense, yes, but we're looking more towards collaboration, coordination, team problem solving, system thinking, critical thinking, and not, I'm going to be the ninja, the warrior who goes out there, super courageous, fearless, defiant, almost.
Mm-hmm.
So checking your words against that can be very helpful, especially when you think of, well, who's writing the job description and what words appeal to that person versus, well, what's the candidate you're trying to attract and what's the culture mm-hmm. you're trying to build in your organization.
Right. And so you mentioned that a lot of times women and other underrepresented populations will say that, you know, I don't have 90% of the requirements, I only have 75, so I can't apply. So if we can switch back to the job seeker perspective, what should we be doing when we're looking for a job? Do we need to check every single box? Is there a certain threshold? And how can we help people get that confidence to apply even if they only have 75% of the qualifications?
Right, only 75%. And, you know, if you were a hiring manager, wouldn't you be thrilled to have someone who has 75% of what you've listed out there? Because the reality is on so many job descriptions, they may be appended over time, mm-hmm. but no one ever takes the old stuff off of it, or it represents the whole team's skills instead of what am I looking for in this one new hire for my bench strength. So kind of overcoming that, do I need to be able to, and it's unfortunate, this is sometimes the environment we're facing though when you're underrepresented population, you may feel you need to walk in the door the first day if you're hired, or even in the job interview, and prove that you belong there because you meet 100%. And that's not the truth, because other candidates are not going to have 100% either. So it's not you against the paper mm-hmm. of the job listing, but it's you against, well, who are the other candidates? And what's special about you? What do you bring to it? And just recognizing you have a lot to offer. You know, worst that happens, you don't get a job interview. Best that happens, you get a phone screen, show how good you are, and then you get further interviews and perhaps a job offer.
So what are some of the ways that these unconscious biases that people may have come out when it comes to having that in-person, face-to-face interview?
Right, and there really isn't necessarily any way around those so much as helping people acknowledge that they exist and that if they can identify when they're doing it, to be aware of it, but also make it have panels of people who interview and make sure you're bringing diverse people, whether diverse backgrounds, diverse educations, diversity that are visible, whatever it is, you know, and they have to be knowledgeable about mm-hmm. what they're interviewing for, but so that they are bringing their own biases probably, whether towards or against someone, but you've got a better balance
right.
of what's there instead of, okay, it's going to be the majority population in here that's looking for someone just like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got a broader group who can all provide feedback that hopefully balances out.
Yeah. So I'm sure there are some people listening saying, well, Sandy, we're only having men apply, so there just aren't qualified women. What's your response to that?
I'll resist swearing and just say bull. You know, I've got to call BS mm-hmm. on that one. There are so many qualified women out there. And I would say it's probably one of two things. Either they're facing that crisis of self-confidence, so not applying because they're not hitting that 75, 80%, or they've already self-selected not to apply to your organization because what they see in the media, what they see from other people who maybe work there and are posting on LinkedIn, they may not be seeing anyone that looks like themselves, has their values, so they can't picture themselves being there. So, and in the absence of any of that, they're just going on their own mental model of, well, what do they think that organization, just like Harvard,
mm-hmm.
you know, anyone who's applying there is probably thinking, a bunch of affluent white men sitting in a heavily paneled room, and that's not the case at all, but how do you break that mental mindset?
Right, and so let's say somebody makes it past that initial job application, they make it through the interview, they're hired. Let's talk a little bit about retention and what we can do to keep qualified people on board. So what are some of the retention challenges that we're seeing when it comes to women and other underrepresented groups?
Right. Well, so first of all, as you're saying, okay, they made it, you know, do they really feel that, you know, I am organization name, you know, or am I just they hired me because they needed to fill, you know, a quota.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to feel valued, and they have to feel that they belong. You know, hopefully the immediate team that they're on can provide that kind of family team spirit that actually makes them feel included. But absent that, you know, what kind of groups are there, affinity groups or volunteer groups, whatever, connect them to those? You know, oh, here's a women in technology group. Here's an employee resource group that is dealing with Latin X, whether A or O, people working here, just so that they have a support network. And then there are also mentoring programs. I mean, the big thing when you're already the underrepresented population may feel everybody's looking at me to fail, and I represent all women or all people of color or whatever it is. You don't want to highlight a vulnerability or perceived vulnerability in yourself by asking for help, because that's almost acknowledging, yeah, I don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
But having official programs or easy ways into them that, no, we expect you to take advantage mm-hmm. of this program because we want you to succeed here. You know, there's just different ways to pitch it. So it's not, oh, you're struggling, here, go do this. It's, no, we value you and we want to ensure your success.
Right.
So we have this program.
And so for somebody who's looking for a job, what can they do to try to see if the place that they're applying has that kind of support and that kind of network? And so that they're not, you know, leaving a decent job for a place that's really not going to support them and, you know, their individual needs.
Wow. So there are official sites they can go to and unofficial sites they mm-hmm. could go to. Certainly go to the company's organization's website and search to see if they have different affinity groups. Probably be on an HR page. Would hope there'd be links to something like mm-hmm. that anyway. Look on their LinkedIn site, both for the organization and if you know anybody there. Follow what they've been highlighting, you know, what kind of community outreach or whatever you value, what mm-hmm. are they doing? If they have an Instagram account, look to see what they're posting there, and not just the official, you know, public affairs communication group, but mm-hmm. what are employees putting out there? And absent that, go to your LinkedIn network, your own mm-hmm. personal one, and ask people, what are you hearing about this place?
Mm-hmm.
Better to know ahead of time, or at least think of questions you can ask, or come up with questions that you ask during the interview. It's two-way. You're evaluating, do I want to work mm-hmm. at this place? So find out what they have to offer.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting about your session is you talked about how the repelling force of job interviews or job descriptions is so much stronger than the attracting force can be. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic where one would think you read a job description and you're immediately attracted to it. And so if you put that job description through one of those gender decoder kind of tools and you change the language a bit, so maybe, you know, it's no longer hacker or warrior, but problem solver, critical thinker, team player,
mm-hmm.
And you repost that. If you were to put them side by side, you will find that now that underrepresented population will be less repelled from that one, but mm-hmm. very, very much repelled from the initial one that's very aggressive, dominant. But those who would be attracted to the aggressive, dominant language will not be repelled strongly from the other, and they will still apply to both.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much the attraction as, and they may not be attracted to the softer language one, but they'll still look through the bullet points and say, yeah, I want to work at that place and I can do this job. So it's really how many are you turning away, not how many are you attracting. And you just want to minimize that repelling factor.
Mm-hmm. And so I bet there are some people who are thinking, well, we've got qualified people. Why should I care about having more women or more people of color in these positions? Why is that something that's important?
Right. It's important to the company's or the organization's success, actually, because now you have diversity of thought, of background. So, you know, when you say diversity, it's not always just physically what's visible, but it could be just the way people think. Extroverts versus introverts, data-driven versus visual-driven, whatever. So now when you have to fix a problem or try to code something or appeal to different demographics, you know, you have to look to see what is your organization trying to do from its business goals, who are they serving, and if your staff doesn't match that diversity, you're not going to have successful products. And, you know, in cybersecurity, you know, the hackers come from all kinds of backgrounds now too, so having various backgrounds inside will help think of, okay, what might the attacks be, and how do we defend against them or prevent them?
Mm-hmm. And so what might your advice be for somebody who they realize their enterprise is not in good shape right now and they want to try to change that? What are some of the first steps that they can take to make it a more inclusive and welcoming place?
Okay, so some of the first steps they can take. I would say first and foremost, have some of your management start doing some work with outreach programs. Go and be visible, be involved in some various high school girls in STEM, She Codes, you know, Women in Technology, International Professional Association groups, whatever. Have them go and listen to these populations and really hear about what are the challenges and how can we overcome some of those challenges in our workplace. But I think without that, and you have to be open-minded, right? So mm-hmm. where you're saying they want to change, I'm going to assume they're open-minded, but it really has to be a lot of times those companies, organizations facing that lack of diversity probably are not realizing that they are in a majority kind of privileged position and they're not facing hardships. And not until they actually hear about what it was like growing up in a particular neighborhood for this group of students who have been in the Year Up program or something like that, and just all the hardships they have to overcome and where they are now, how far they've come, that they really appreciate, oh, I'm not lowering standards. Like, this is somebody who has a lot of tenacity, a lot of drive, a lot of curiosity, who would be a valuable asset, and really open their minds to, oh, it's good to get into these populations. And I think you really need to first mm-hmm. turn around that mindset and just get exposed to what's out there.
You've been in this industry for a while. Have you always had that confidence, or was there a time where you were, you know, unsure? And what can you tell our listeners who maybe have a little bit of imposter syndrome and don't really believe that they're quite capable of it?
I will tell you, I am currently seeing an executive coach, which is a fantastic, I've never had one before, which I don't know how that happened. I am always facing imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I don't know, you know, why am I considered an expert in this? I'm just me. This is what I've been doing. And it's really good to have a support network there who can kind of help you rationalize away the negative self-talk to say, the facts don't point to this. Let's look at what mm-hmm. you've done, what you've accomplished. This is just irrational. You know, I realize it's an emotion. You know, let that emotion pass, and this is why you are good in this and are considered an mm-hmm. expert in this. I don't think there are many people who don't suffer from imposter syndrome at some point. And I will tell you honestly, Harvard is the hardest environment I've been in. You know, and my master's is from Harvard, right? So I am Harvard on two levels, staff and, you know, graduate, alumni. Mm-hmm. But just the environment there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to feel like, oh my gosh, you know, I was the mistake. You know, how did they let me in? Instead of, no, you're a great asset to them. You bring a lot of value. But, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it's hard to internalize the successes. Yeah. And my executive coach and I work on that. And so much of it, I think, particularly in women, is how we were raised as kids to be humble. You know, work hard, but be humble. And that can be tough to get over that because that's what we may have been coded to think that's what society expects from us.
Right.
So to go against that, there's not evidence by anyone saying you're bad, you're mm-hmm. not worthy of this. It's just been ingrained. right. that you're like, oh no, you know, it's not a big deal what I've done. So I'm like, yeah, it is. Own it.
Right. Yeah. All right. And then is there anything else that you want to add that you didn't discuss, have a chance to discuss in the podcast or during your session, or just that you think our listeners might benefit from?
I would just encourage people to give back, to help support others, to realize if you're coming in, even an organization with the best of intentions, with some beginning support programs in place, that any person who is an only or, you know, or one of two is going to have moments of doubt, who may just need, I would say not hand-holding, but positive reinforcement that, yes, we made a good decision with you. We're glad you're here. You add value. Just so that they don't get into that negative self-talk spin and convince themselves that they're not worthy and leave.
Yeah.
So, you know, pay it forward, give it back, whatever way you want to say it, but support those who are there so that they don't become their own worst enemy.
Thanks, Andy. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave a rating for us.